Radio Live, the webcast. It's Friday night, May the 11th, 2007. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account of the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and with reverence." Well, looking at the church news this week, there ain't too much left of the church. I mean, I have some commentaries that I have to share with you. This is Pastor John in the Lucy Coleman studio, the Ram Radio Live, the webcast, my Friday night commentary. Like I said, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. Ramey wrote me, and Ramey said, "We're living in the last days. The Bible foretells that there will be a great falling away. These folk have fallen completely off of the narrow way. This is abomination, desolation. I wonder what kind of excuse these folks will give Jesus on Judgment Day for this foolishness." I have in front of me an article here that was written by Todd Friel. And in this particular article, there's a picture of a pastor who is in his preaching garment, and he's sitting on an elephant in front of the church. Oh, my goodness. I got to read the article, and I got to, you know, stay as serious as I possibly can. My second article is going to be on the pimp himself, T.D. Jakes' new book, Repositioning Yourself, Living Life Without Limits, What? And then an article by Pamela Meister speaks about the danger from within. My goodness. America, America, America. Then if we get to it, Mexican children cross the border to go to school. An article by Sarah Viren from the Houston Chronicle. Thank you for joining me tonight. I'm Pastor John in Los Angeles. And we're going to take a good look at the church. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say, okay, well, let's try to figure this thing out. What's going on here? How far do we go with this? Whew. It's really bad. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get ready to just testing the studio stuff here. Yeah, okay, here we go. I wanna take you into the first article, and I'm going to try to be as serious as I possibly can about this, okay? If you don't see this, you won't believe it. This is a picture of a Methodist pastor, Jim Lavender, riding an elephant during an outdoor church service. Oh, wait, it gets worse. Advent Lutheran pastor Rick Hartman from Melbourne, Florida, a.k.a. Ricardo the Clown, attempts to justify dressing as a clown as he leads communion by stating that the clown means clod or a buffoon, and God used a clod of dirt to make man. Therefore, if God can use a clod of dirt, he can use a clod, which is a circus clown to him, to do good. Got it? Furthermore, Ricardo the Clown, a.k.a. Pastor Rick Hartman, claims the New Testament says that we are supposed to be servants. And in the word, servant means clown. Actually, it doesn't. And even if it did, it is preposterous to think that pastors are supposed to dress like Bim Bam the Clown. But these guys don't think so. These guys are just totally ridiculous. Hold on, Pastor Ricardo's word study isn't over. He claims that we are to be fools for Christ. Therefore, we should put on face paint, honk our horns during worship. Sorry, Pastor. Each word for fool in the New Testament refers to intellect, wisdom, and understanding, not wearing floppy shoes. But wait, there's more, webcast listener. Here's a picture of some Episcopalian priest holding up the elements for clown communion in New York City. And sure enough, I'm looking at the picture right now, and one of these days when I get my streaming video, you'll be able to see it in the church with all the statues They're holding up the bread in the sack, and they're all dressed like clowns and mames. Just what in the world is going on here? How does a grown man conclude with a straight face that I think that it would be a good idea to dress like Wiggles for church? There are three reasons, this particular writer says. Ecclesiology. The pastors believe that the Sunday church service is to be used to draw seekers. See, that's the whole point. Now, here's my commentary. I ain't going to church trying to draw nobody. I'm going to church, as I told you months and months and months ago on this webcast. Every Sunday that I go and preach, and I'm about two quarters finished with my sermon this week. When I go to sermon to preach, I'm going to preach to empty the room. I'm not going to fill it up. For starters, the article says, only God seeks. Second, church should be an assembling of the saints, not a two together people who want to see choo-choo. That is, choo-choo the clown. Absolutely right. Second reason is holiness. The pastors must not understand that our God is a consuming fire. When Isaiah was in the presence of God, he said, my mouth is unclean. Isaiah experienced firsthand that God is holy and high and inapproachable light. What must Pastor Cornflake think God is like? And then thirdly, the answer is sola scriptura. The reformers believe that faith came by hearing, and hearing from the word of God, Romans chapter 10, verse 17. But modern church growth methods apparently forget that verse, as they believe that we are to entertain the people into the kingdom. Clown pastors have a low view of scripture. Well, of course they do. Then the writer goes on and says that John Wesley said, ignorance of the nature and design of the law is at the bottom of the most religious mistakes. It could be argued that these ministers do not understand the law of God. But Romans chapter 7, verses 12 through 22 tells us that the law of God is perfect, and it is a perfect representation of God's character. If these ministers understood that God is so high and holy, we cannot even covet our neighbor's property, perhaps they would not be so quick to turn the Lord's Supper into a silly gimmick. Paul warned the Corinthian Christians to examine themselves prior to participating in communion. Some are weak, sick, and dying because they were not. We can only imagine how God feels about clown communion. Then the article ends up and says, in the last particular paragraph, it says, to put this into perspective, imagine a secular business using a clown to lure people into their establishment, and it hopes that the poor, unsuspecting clown seeker will purchase their product. Oh, wait, car dealers and McDonald's already do. Unfortunately, Jesus is neither an automobile nor a hamburger. Somebody needs to tell Pastor Chuckles. Let me tell you something. Telling Chuckles won't do any good, because this is the way of the church these days. I mean, it's got so bad, we've opened the doors and let them in, and we've ordained people that are not truly pastors. They have no idea what the pastorate is all about. And so that's why our churches are suffering from these disgusting, disgusting dilemma that's set before us. It's just another cycle of the twisted, twisted church membership. May 9, 2007, T.D. Jakes, repositioning yourself. Go to the next level. On Monday afternoon, here's an article written by Felicia Pride. And when I first started reading the article, I thought that Felicia would be against what T.D. is doing, but only to find out that she approves it. Well, that points out to me that Felicia is not only lost, but that she is pushing a lost person's agenda. Yeah. Touchdown has a new book, Repositioning Yourself. Now, before I give the commentary on this, let me say this. I am not jealous of T.D. Jakes in any way. I'm not jealous of his popularity of his book marketing and his church growth methodologies. I want nothing that he has. I don't even want to be on the same platform with him or on the same stage with him. It's not like that with me. I just don't view him as a Christian. That's all. He's not a Christian. Now, for most black people that are Christians in this country do view him as a Christian. So this kind of gives me an indication of where the black church is, because it's the blind leading the blind. On Monday afternoon, now you'll hear me break in on this article and give my comments on this also. On Monday afternoon, hundreds of people lined up on 125th Frederick Douglass Boulevard in Harlem, waiting to gain entry into the world-famous Apollo Theater. Why? Because Bishop T.D. Jakes was appearing, of course. The topic? The title of his new book, Reposition Yourself, Living Without Limits. Now, you know, it's very interesting when I look at this. Okay, it's very interesting when I look at this title and I think of T.D. Jakes and what he's doing to people's minds. Only a sinner would follow this man, because a saint knows that they cannot reposition themselves in any way. Along with other few journalists that was there, this writer says that they had the opportunity to speak with Bishop Jakes for about 6.5 minutes before his sold-out event. So they had to buy tickets to get in. His people were rushing him because apparently Radio 1's Kathy Hughes was waiting to speak to him. So T.D. Jakes looks like he does on television as he talked to the small group of us, Felicia says. He was pleasant and humble. And I can understand that. The man is a millionaire. And so he's pleasant now because he has what he needs and he's pushing a new product. Then he says he spoke with sincerity and soft passion. What does that mean? Felicia, you don't even know what passion is. The passion to sucker people? And then he says, and he was honest about his own fears, which made me forget that he was on the New York Times best-selling author for more than 30 books. And that he started a gospel music record label, founded a Christian preparatory school, helms a Dallas-based megachurch, which boasts with more than 30,000 members, and that his TV show, The Potter's Touch, reaches 67 million households per month. Quiet as kept. I didn't know that he had a TV show, but what else is new? His new book is touted as a makeover for the soul and aims to provide tools to anyone who wants to attain success and prosperity. Now, here again, there's nothing wrong with someone being successful and prosperous in what they do, but my God in heaven, anyone can do that as they just get a job and get up and go to work every day, right? He addresses in the book such issues as a facing failure and understanding that it's a prelude to success. What? A failure being a prelude to success? How? Failure means that that didn't work. It doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily be success in anything different. But I guess that's the way Jakes looks at it. He talks about creating your own personal brand by combining identity plus expectations, getting rid of credit card debt, coping with setbacks, and succeeding as a woman in business, keeping your family close, and giving back to your community. In August, he'll release the workbook to accompany Repositioning Yourself, and in November, he'll release a book of meditations. Here's a snippet of the conversations with T.D. Jakes. I guess this writer's getting into it. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read it, and I'm going to be critical. Here's a question. Did he think that he was going to be the head of a mega church with a congregation of more than 30,000 people? This is what Jake says. Not at all. He says, it would have scared me to death. I started preaching in a small room. I didn't know about big churches in West Virginia, he says. I didn't know about television, payroll, or staff. It would just scare me to death. I didn't really set out to do it. It happened. But then he says, but you have to learn how to manage it once it does happen. Now, I'm going to tell you, it didn't just happen. It was a plan, and you all shouldn't believe a liar. This man is no Christian. He's lying to you. You know, I have never seen in Christianity anything happen to this. 3,000 were added to the church in Jerusalem, and immediately that church was being persecuted. I don't see Jakes being persecuted. There's no persecution anywhere around him. Here's the next question. How does he manage the fear that comes along with success? Well, let me tell you something. If you're successful in God, there is never any fear. And so here again, that's a misnomer. It doesn't make any sense to say that you're successful, but you're fearful of that success. But Jake says the hardest part to manage is the fear. What? Doesn't the Bible says there is no fear in love? I mean, this is just a total contradiction of Christianity. Then he says there is an unbelievable fear that comes with success. That is not true. Because when success truly comes your way as a Christian, God is the one that is successful. You are not successful because whatever you are doing for the praise of his glory. Jakes is not doing this for the praise of God's glory. Trust me. He is lying on God and lying on the Bible. If you know of anything that he says, you know that that is true. Then he goes on and says, you rely on friends, prayer, and on some days, quite frankly, you don't manage the fear. Now, where's God in the answer? Friends, prayer. Prayer to whom? Because these people are not talking about praying to the same God that I as a Christian pray to. You have to understand, when they talk about prayer, they're talking about praying to the thing that gives them their money and their stuff. And then he says, but you feel the fear and do it anyway. What? I've never felt fear in anything that I've done. And I see myself as a very successful pastor. There's no fear in what I do. Once I was invited to the Master's College to speak to the chapel, over 2,500 students in the gym there in the Master's College. I was the speaker of the morning. My camera crew came out with me. I have a copy of that. I'm going to have to put that on DVD and send it out to you and so that you can see a copy of that. And friends, when you see, never. I have spoken to large crowds. There is never any fear. Because whenever you get up and preach the word of God, you just do it the way God tells you to do it, but no fear. And then he says, work your way out of the fear. No, you don't have to work your way. The perfect love casts out all fear. If you have Christ in you, you don't have to work out your way for anything. You Christians have no business buying this book. You professing Christians have no business supporting this man. He's a liar. Then he says, there are people in my life that when I'm really feeling overwhelmed, they calm me down. What? Where's the Holy Spirit in you? There is none. Then he says, my wife is one of them. Well, of course he has to, because a man has to nearby worship his wife. They have to do that. Lucy never had to calm me down from anything. The only thing I got upset was trying to figure out why in the heck is the church loving to get rid of me. Next question was, how does he categorize himself? He says, I wanted to be a helpmate to my generation. Can you believe that? Can you believe the arrogance of this despicable creature? He wanted to be a helpmate to his generation. Do you know what the term helpmate means? But that's how arrogant they think they are. Then he says, a comfort to my community. What community? To the rich and famous? Used by President Bush during Katrina to go down there and calm down the savage beast in that dome down there that was damaged. Now, he wants to be a helpmate to his generation. He says preaching became a vehicle to do that. What? Yes. See, but was it biblical preaching? See, the black man that becomes a preacher always sees the art of preaching as a tool to manipulate his community. I have never done that. And I'm not saying all black preachers. But I'm saying that it has become that. He tells you right up front, these folk are ignorant. And the way to get what I want is to use the camouflage of me being a pastor. Then he said, I wanted to give people what I wanted. What's that? What? You mean to tell me you was a preacher and you didn't have hope in Christ? You was a preacher and you didn't cast all your care on him because he cared for you? I thought that that was the way that we were supposed to do it. But this is what he wanted. Support, encouragement, and help. What? Get up and get a job, fool. You want some support? Get up and get a job. Encouragement? Look in the word of God. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. And help? James Brown put it well. Just open the door, I do it myself. See, I think that we're missing out on something like that. Then he says, my ministry, books, and my movies, and everything I do is me saying, don't give up and quit. You can do this. Well, let me tell you something. No, you can't. See, because he got the market on that. And what you'd have to do is you'd have to forbade God in your life if you ended up doing something like that. So he says, so I started to say to people what I really wanted to hear and hoped that it helped them. Well, that's nothing but a prosperity speaker, you know, talking about success, and then people feed into your talk. This is what I try to tell people. How do you think millionaires get rich? Millionaires get rich from people buying their products and giving them the money. Now, if you got 20 million people buying a book at $19.95 each, and the print and press people get their money, and all the other people working in advertisement gets theirs, how much you think he's going to get at the end? The man's going to become a millionaire at least 10 times. Now, he got over 30 books on the market. You people keep buying the books. You got 30 books, and your life hasn't changed yet. Have you figured it out? It's the same kind of game that Donald Trump is running on people. It was never intended for everybody to be millionaires. Here's the next question. How does he manage a megachurch with 30,000 members and maintain the necessary order? Jakes answers and says that I think that a megachurch is a bunch of mini churches that come together on Sunday. But that's a lie. You ain't got a whole bunch of mini pastors. Because when you're talking about a megachurch of 30,000 people, how many pastors do you have in there? Trust me. I know black pastors. They're the head knocker, and they don't believe in a plurality of elders. If they do, they're token jobs where they're just giving those men a living too. Maybe giving them $60,000, $70,000 a year to just keep the maddening crowd off their back when he's doing book signings. Then he says, we have to be organized to service our people. Yeah, I bet you do. And that's why my book talks about organize and structure, because that is what my church needed. As you start to grow, you need to have a plan in place. Well, but that's what you do in a business. The church is not a business. The church is just people coming, setting, you proclaiming the word, and them getting up, leaving. Jake says that I speak to people about the structure in place that you need to go to the, you know, you have to have the structure in place in order to go to the next level. What does that mean? That sounds like some things that Kenny Ulmer talks. Sounds like the same kind of organizational structure that Tony Evans talks when he gives his conference, by the way, which is coming up in October in the Dallas, Fort Worth area. All of it is the same thing, same kind of jargon, so that you don't become stuck. What do you mean become stuck? Are you running a business or are you running a church? And I'm telling you, if they're teaching this in seminary now, God is not in this, because you have to do away with God in order to bring these in. He says sometimes our people fall in love with low, and anything that is upward we avoid. Ain't that a mess? Black people fall in love with low, and anything that's upward we avoid. Now, you know what he's trying to say? He's trying to say, see, they're not thinking about my mansion. They aren't thinking about my swimming pools, my Bentleys, my diamonds, my $5,000 suits. See, they're thinking about Crest and JCPenney's and Woolworths and stuff like that. Well, they got other stores, right? Somehow, Jake says, that slavery mentality has affected us so that we do not feel entitled to anything better. Well, here again, there's something wrong with that statement, because feelings of entitlement doesn't mean that you're going to get there. You work hard for things to change. Then he goes on and says, and anyone who escapes or goes higher, we think it's wrong. That's not true. You see, what he's doing, he is making sweeping generalizations and making statements on a slippery slope. And if you know anything about logic and philosophy, you know that he is speaking these things to people of low self-esteem that would look to him as a way to help them lift them up by their own bootstraps, because they've never gone to school or tried to advance themselves in higher education. That's what higher education is all about. You know, you get a 4-year degree in college. That's why, you know, a lot of the parents send their children to school. You go away to college and you learn the art and sciences of sociology and the sciences and philosophy, anthropology, and you learn about these things and you realize what your life is all about. Instead of having somebody that's been on the dole their whole life, second or third or fourth generations, and all of a sudden you see a preacher and you everything the preacher says, you just believe it because he's supposed to be speaking for God. And then you fall into a quandary and try to become a millionaire. He says, when some of us make it to a high level, we want to take their black card away. And I'm trying to get our people to understand that it's okay to go to the next level. And that's what repositioning yourself is all about. Now, I'm trying to figure out what he meant by this. When some of us do make it to a high level, he says, we want to take their black card away. What is that? Their black card. Oh, they don't want to be black no more? No, that's not true either. But here again, here's a man that's not very educated himself, if he has an education at all. Because me, I have 3 degrees and I know that I'm black and I'm not trying to be white. I don't have those kinds of feelings. I haven't run off and left my community in the dirt. But I will tell my community to do better for yourself. Work hard to accomplish something. And I will tell the people in my community, you're not going to get anything in this life without very, very hard work. Especially, that's the way this country was built. This country's crazy now. This whole country's headed towards entitlement. That's why the preachers are riding around in elephants and writing books. After speaking with Bishop Jakes, the writer says that they decided to stay for part of the program and that they were feeling inspired. And then she said that she's glad that she did. Well, she was feeling inspired, right? Yeah, right. The elegant Ruby D recited stirring poetry. See, that's bringing the other sinners into the show. Why didn't somebody get up and read the Bible, since he's a pastor? No, he's going to bring a secular actress in to read poetry. And then this writer says, for such a small woman, she's incredibly powerful. What does she mean by that? I've seen Ruby D. I've heard her speak. There's nothing powerful about that woman. What? She's a pretty good actress. Wait a minute. One line that she spoke stayed with me. Listen to the line. Listen to the line, Christians. The day is ours. Let's take it. Quote, unquote. What? What do you mean the day is yours? What? I think that the Bible reads like this. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. It doesn't say to take it. It's yours. See what I'm talking about? This twist of the idea that we do, especially when we read and listen to people like this. As a nice surprise, this writer says, Donnie McKirkland sang Roberta Flack, Killing Me Softly, with his song. Now, wait a minute. Donnie McKirkland is a pastor and a Christian. And instead of him singing Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, he sings, killing me softly with her love, killing me quickly with this, as I go floating around, killing me softly with her love, with her love, killing me softly. T.D. Jakes, pastor. Donnie McKirkman, pastor. Ruby D., sinner. Singing Roberta Flack's Sinner's Sinful Song as a tribute to T.D. Jakes. T.D. Jakes is so powerful, so magnificent, that his success is killing me softly with his love, with his books. That's abomination. That's making this clown a god. And in the famed Apollo Theater, sinners see what sinners be. Let me keep going. Then he brought the church into the Apollo Theater and sung the famous Stand. Well, of course he had to do that because people would say, hey, wait a minute, ain't he supposed to be a pastor? See, he brought church. In other words, he blended the world with the church because that's what T.D. Jakes' book is all about. Reposition yourself, Donnie. It's not just about Jesus. It's, come on, man. Just tell them all to reposition themselves. He told the crowd that he felt like singing. And he did just that. Yeah, I bet he did. Each attendee walked out with a copy of Reposition Yourself and probably an urge to live a life without limits. Say what? Say what? They walked out with an urge to live a life without limits? No, I'll tell you what they did. They walked out with a copy of the book. And when they walked out of Harlem, you got 200-300 people with a copy of the book. And then they're all showing it. And then the other natives are going to go to the nearest bookstore and they're going to buy a copy. Give something free to get something back. That's a business principle. Everybody knows about that. Give them something free. Get something back. Especially give something free to black people. See, they really think you've done something for them. Give them a gift. They can say, ooh, look what T.D. Jakes gave me. Yeah, he would have signed mine, but he smiled at me, mama. He smiled at me. Yeah. Let's keep moving. Segueing into the next article. You can tell this is really, you know, bothersome to me, isn't it? Well, of course it is. Of course it is. Very bothersome to me. Here's an article by Pamela Meister. And Ramey wrote a little tidbit on this. He says, this week, followers of the Religion of Peace were caught planning to kill the soldiers at Fort Dix. It's amazing that the news media has given this story little attention. What is it going to do to wake these folk up, Ramey says? Will an additional 3,000 American citizens have to die before people wake up to the threat that is amongst us? Personally, I believe that God... Ramey, I just want to tell you this, man. Didn't no terrorists from another country off them two buildings in New York City, man? As a matter of fact, I tell you guys this. I cleaned up a lot of space on my hard drive today because, you know, when I go to the YouTube... I can't see all the video clips that people send me because my memory was so low, it started to cut off. So I got rid of a whole bunch of space, and I typed in 9/11 the towers. I said, well, let me just see that video that I was looking at a number of months ago. And they put some other ones up since I've been there. You just go to YouTube and type in Twin Towers 9/11. And these videos are going to show, and they had an interesting video. And Ramey, if you're listening... They have an interesting video on there where they showed this plane that hit the building, the second plane, and it wasn't an airline plane. And some of these clips, of course, they're playing because I remember 9/11 and some of the news clips, the explosions going off and the implosions and everything else. So if terrorists do come in this country, they are probably terrorists from within. Because that's how the government can control you, man. And I have a friend of mine by He's watching the game. I'm going to join him right after I finish the webcast tonight. But I was showing him some of the video clips, and he said, "Man, what is that?" I said, "Why don't you tell me? Does it look like the bottom of a passenger airline?" And so the inevitable question is, what happened to the people? Well, what do you think happened to them? We're living in, well, here it is. Listen to this. This week we found out that a mix of Muslim men were arrested and charged with plotting to attack Fort Dix in New Jersey with the intent of killing as many soldiers as they possibly could in the name of these of the Islamic Jihad. Now, first of all, if they got these men, they had to chop their hands off and send them back to, Lord forgive me, I almost said something, Saudi Arabia. I was going to call it something else. They were undone when they brought the video, which they had to at a retail store to be burned into a DVD. A store employee, suspicious, were aroused by the content, the men shooting assault weapons while shouting, "Allah Akbar, God is great," and he alerted authorities. Well, I'm glad that he did. I mean, these idiots didn't even know how to burn their own video. All they had to do was, well, let me leave that alone. Will CARE get involved in this violation of the men's civil rights as they did six imams who were booted from the U.S. Airways flight last year? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't read that right. The article is making me sick. You can tell. Will CARE get involved in this violation of the man's rights as they did with the six imams who were booted from the U.S. Airways last year? Should photo store employees worry about being sued for reporting suspicious content as an unidentified employee in New Jersey did? The media was slow to include the suspect's religious affiliation, preferring instead to identify some of the men as ethnic Albanians. Once the White House announced that they were Islamic militants, however, the cat was out of the bag and the media could no longer avoid the connection. But anyone who knows anything about world history would realize that Albania was once part of the Ottoman Empire and 70% of its population is Muslim. Ethnic Albanians were also among those being purged by Serbians in Kosovo. These days, any report of terrorist plots on acting or actual attacks should be investigated for the possibility that those involved might be Muslim. For while not all Muslims are terrorists, most terrorist acts throughout the world are perpetrated by Muslims. How many Timothy McVeighs have there been in comparison with Muslim attackers? All those much is made about the fact that the suspects in the Fort Dix incident are not officially connected with any international terrorist organization. Is it supposed to make us feel better that small groups are taking it upon themselves to informally link to to simply emulate the likes of Al-Qaeda in the name of Islamic Jihad? Well, let me respond to that. Sinners do what sinners are, sinners be, sinners what, whatever. And said, we should even be more alarmed as it is more difficult for federal agents to track independent groups than those taking direction from organizations that they are already familiar with. Now, you know what? The article is long and it's stretched out, and I'm not going to read any more of this because, you know what? I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. With 20 minutes left, I just got to go into this next article right quick, and it's just as sick. I mean, when I get these articles, I read these things, and my mind is messed up for most of the day. Take a deep drink of water here. Okay. I'm cool. Mexican children cross the border to go to school. Their trek to El Paso is common, but some call students costly. Houston Chronicle, 2007. Sarah Viren wrote this article. Now, let's look at this. And I say, well, what do we have here? What, this is America, right? For the past 2 years, Raquel Ortiz commutes to her El Paso school, has begun each morning in Mexico. Wait a minute. She's living in Mexico, but she's going to school in El Paso. She's a Mexican citizen, but she's going to an American school. As the sun rises on the side of the Rio Grande, the first grader follows her father from the cinder block home through the streets of Ciudad Juarez. Arian Ortiz holds his 6-year-old pink backpack and her little hand. At the border, they funnel into the pedestrian bridge alongside dozens of other children with backpacks holding their parents' hands. And they're on the other side, saying goodbye at the gates of Vélez Elementary, while breakfast is served free and special classes are offered for English language learners. Now, some of you may think I'm a cruel, hard guy, but you know what this is all about, the immigration laws. That's what this is all about. It's not about this 6-year-old. You know, I mean, I'm happy that she's able to go to school. I really am. And I'm kind of, you know, having mixed emotions because I'm a minority person myself. And my daughter married into a Hispanic family, to a Mexican family, as a matter of fact. So I'm no bigot. You know me better than that. My grandchild is Mexican. My grandson and my granddaughter, Mexican, Filipino, black. So they all mixed up because the whole world is Mexican. So it's not about racism. It's about laws. At the school, Raquel and her friends, she make friends with the American students. She writes reports on butterflies and decides that she wants to be a doctor for dogs when she grows up. And when the school bell rings at the end of the day, her father is waiting outside, ready to walk her back home to Mexico. This daily cycle is repeated up and down the borderland, where the history of cross-border friendship, families, and marriages has eroded the lines between what is Mexican and what is American. In El Paso, the Mexico to United States trek to school is so commonplace that border officials open a special lane just for the students at one of the crossings this month. In other words, the border guards are saying, hi. More than 1,200 passed through the lane from Mexico on a recent morning. Some are college and private school students, but many, including Raquel, attend public schools. In El Paso, most folks see this as a part of the flux inherent in border life, which there has been some grumbling about the spending of U.S. tax dollars to educate students living in Mexico, especially this spring as the city's biggest school district prepares for a bond election. The El Paso Independent School District, which expects to take in 10,000 new students in the next 5 to 8 years, will ask voters next month for permission to borrow $230 million for school, for new schools. $230 million for new schools. And these are Mexican citizens, not American citizens. With this always comes the argument, stop educating illegal aliens, said El Paso ISD spokesman Luis Villalobos, who blames the growth on America moving to the area for the planned Fort Bliss expansion. But there's been a U.S. ruling. School districts from other border towns say that they face similar complaints, but each contends that they have few ways to count or to control the number of Mexican residents attending their schools. Wait, are they impotent? What you do is you ask for the parent's social security number, and if they ain't got one, the child can't come there. Impotent? They blind? They stupid? Don't do that to me. Don't do that. No, this is politically correct usage of language and everything else. That's what this is. Says the Supreme Court ruled in 1982 that schools cannot deny an education to students living legally in the United States as long as a parent or guardian has proof of residency in that school district. A water bill of these typically will surface so their children can attend the school, and often in places such as El Paso, where hospitals are just a quick trip across the border, students are born in the United States are legal citizens, even if their parents aren't. Okay, I understand that. I understand that. Oh, my goodness. He says that it's hard to split that. But you know what? It may be hard for them to split it, but I'm going to tear this. Now, you want to know what's wrong with us? Save America had a survey come out in the year 2003. I'm going to give you some stats right now, and maybe it can help you out a little bit. Spiritual State of the Union. America's Spiritual Health Chart. Truth? 96% of Americans believe in God. But 91% lie on a regular basis. Morality? 78% believe that we have severe moral decline, yet 96% believe that they are doing a good job teaching children moral values. And only 11% believe that their life or ways have anything to do with moral decline. What? Morally, ethics, and dishonesty were named by the Gallup poll in the year 2001 as the top of the problems facing the nation. Family? Let's see. Highest divorce rate in the world, in America. 48 million children murdered by abortion. This is in the year 2003. Since 1973, 33% of all children were born illegitimate. That's why the black community is so screwed up. Kids have no fathers and mothers together. And the mothers are becoming lesbians by the dozens, and the men are on the down low because they spent so much time in jail. So who they have sex with? Their bunk buddies. Ouch! Cohabitation increased 1,000% since 1960 and 72% since 1990. In terms of peace, nonviolent of all the industrialized nations, rage is an all-time high. Road rage, air rage, outrage, school rage. America. Religion? Most religious of all of the industrialized nations, George Gallup declared that America, quote, a nation of biblical illiterates, we have become a polytheistic nation with the new multi-faith religion, Time magazine declared, in so many God we trust. In so many gods, plural, that is, we trust. We don't trust in the one God. We trust in all these other gods. We've lost our moral compass. America's Christian health chart. Let's look at this. 78% in terms of truth. Truth, 78% mainline Christians, 66% born-again Christians do not believe in absolute truth. Only 9% of Christian youth and 4% of non-Christian youth embrace absolute truth. So what do you think they're going to be when they grow up? They're going to be tripping. Big time. Profess faith? Look at this stat. It'll blow your mind. 75% claim to be Christian in moral precept, a drop of 10% in one decade. 45% claim to be born again. 10% claim to be evangelical. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Evangelical? Did you hear about the head evangelical? The white guy? that became a Catholic this last week? The head of the Evangelical Society, Francis Beckwith, is now a Catholic, he and his wife. Go to my website. You'll see a picture of him. Tap his website. Read his brag sheet. What's happening in America? No more weak, wimpy, wussies. I was speaking with a brother. He said, Pastor John, never change. It's impossible for me to change. Trust me. I don't know how to change. Morality. We're talking about Americans' Christian health chart. 75% born-again Christians lie regularly and consciously. 18% of all abortions are among evangelicals. No observable differences between moral behavior of professing Christians and the rest of America. Relativism is now wrapped up in a religious robe and declared righteous. That's why we got Divergent Church, Emergent Church, Seeker Sensitive Church. That's why you got people like Shuler sleeping in bed with Billy Graham. And you got Billy Graham in bed with Rick Warren. You got Rick Warren in bed with Greg Kokel. You got Greg Kokel in bed with Beckwith. You got Beckwith in bed with the Catholics. You got the Catholics in bed with the Muslims. Man, we're creating, you know what, they're creating a hybrid. I've been telling you, stop listening to these boys that are in these big, huge theological, philosophical institutions where they're selling their books and taking your money and taking you down the Fruit Loop Trail. Don't call me when you tweaking. I used to tell you on the radio years ago that this was going to happen. You didn't believe me. Got your answer by kicking me off the radio. Now it's happening right in front of you. You shot. Listen, Francis Beckwith had to be, he never was saved. He was just selling books. And you know what? When you, all right, you young preachers, listen to me. Listen to me. I know it. You listen to me. You've given them $50,000, $60,000. You've gone to their grad schools. You've written their PhD thesis. You've done your master's dissertation. You've marched with the robes. Oh, I know, because I was hooded with my master's degree. But I'm telling you, I got a good theological pastoral ministry education. I didn't listen to Neil Anderson like he knew what he was talking about. Quiet as kept, I asked him many times, are you nuts, man? You expect me to believe that? Many a time I'm in the radio studio, stand to reason. I was in that studio before Greg Kokel came in there with his racist self. You have to understand, one of my staff had become matrimonized to a white girl. And Greg Kokel asked her, what are you doing here with them? Now, what kind of language is that coming from a Christian? And I got him. I got him that next Sunday. I got him big time. I said, if you ever open up your mouth to any of my staff and say anything, I will broadcast and tell these people on this station what you really are. You know, and he's from Skokie, Chicago, around there. And you remember during Martin Luther King days, how those folk around there were. And so he's from that neighborhood. So what do you expect? You know, you can take a fox out of the woods, but the woods is still in the fox. I'm just telling it like it is. I don't play no game. And listen, for those of you that are mesmerized by these theologues and by their prestige and by all of this and that, I'm not. And you're going to see more of them dropping off. You're going to see a lot of them dropping off. They never believed the Bible. They never believed this. It was just a tool for them to make money. You have to understand, you were the pawn. I know I got so many books in my library. Know what I'm doing since I'm moving to a smaller place? I'm giving the books away. Every time Bible study come up Wednesday night, I'm saying, hey, I got three shelves of books. Take anything you want. I remember when I found out that Kittle was a racist. I dumped my 10-volume set. And you let me find out anything on John MacArthur. I'm just waiting for anything to come up on him. And I got all of his stuff. I'd have to get rid of about one-third of my library. Because I don't put my faith in man. And I have the books because there's a lot of sustenance material in there. But once I found out you clowning me, please, Now, I'll read his transliteration for the rest of my days. I think it's a great work. But ain't no man God. You better hear me. People around here buying these people's books like you buying hamburgers. Why, it's no wonder the church is so screwed up. Don't even know how to stand on your own. Oh, it's terrible, terrible, terrible. Oh, what does it mean? Frank Beckwith is now a Catholic. He never was not a Catholic. He just came on the Protestant bandwagon to make him some dockets. He was a head of the Evangelical Society of America. Yeah? Why haven't you heard anybody blast him in the Evangelical Church in America? Do you know why you haven't heard them blast him? Because they're ready to follow him. I have my little comment on the website. Is Mary now your mediatress? Did she die for your sins, Frank? Wait a minute. Now you're listening to the Pope. So Christ is no longer the head of the church. The pontiff is who you listen to. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You saw your nephew was going to be confirmed as a Catholic, and he asked you to attend, and you could not figure out how to say no. You could have attended, but you could have told him, you know, I ain't believing in this. I'm just attending here because I love you. Remember, I have Catholic people in my family that I love them, but I don't believe in everything that they believe in that church, and I tell them. So, see, let's not get this twisted. That is not a reason, and I'm not saying that you should hate Catholics either, because I know some Catholics that are more godly than some Protestants. I mean, just flat out. And so, you know, you can take that any way you put that in your pipe and smoke it. But the point is, we're living in some dangerous times here. They are going to do more than that in the future. They are going to take advantage of you. Why are they doing that? Because they are not Christians. It's simple as that. They're not Christians. They're in it for the game. Now, as I come to an end of this, oh yeah, just a minute. And I went to Beckwith's blog. I read most of it till I got sick. I was going to talk about it tonight. Probably tomorrow night on the Saturday night webcast, I'll devote 2 hours to Mr. Beckwith and his brain trip and try to help you out of the melee of listening to people like that. Or instead of asking yourself this question, how could that happen? It could happen very easy. It happens when you're not grounded in anything. You're not grounded in anything because you all into you. See, I'm grounded in Christ Jesus. I told one brother earlier, I said, man, I love the Lord so much, I'm not going out that way. If I'm going out, man, I hope he take me out with a truck hitting me and snapping my head off or something, but going out defaming God like that. If you just listen to his arguments, you would know that there is something dangerously amiss with Mr. Beckwith. But you know what? We want to be politically right and says, well, you know, my brother, he does have his opinion and he's still a brother. But don't talk to me like that. That's that evangelical mess. That language has been going on too long. And don't anybody ever try to talk that trash to me, because I'm not hearing you. I'm not hearing you. Remember, keep it in mind. I am not going out that way. All right, here we go. My time is up. My time is up. I want to thank you. I really do. For tuning in to the webcast today. Commentary, man. Every week it gets worse and worse with me. I can't stand doing these commentaries. I'm thinking that I'm going to change Friday night to continuously teaching the Bible. Because, man, I thought that it would be a nice time to give a few articles, but everything is becoming more and more nuts here. Thank you for tuning in to the webcast. I really appreciate you doing that. Tomorrow night, the 2-hour webcast, Pacific time, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Mark Ramsey and I will join you here in the Lucy Coleman studio. Sunday, theologically speaking, bring you a brand new subject matter on theology. Looking forward to seeing you. And then, of course, on Monday night, we start all over again doing the same thing. I'm your radio host, Pastor John Coleman. Thank you for tuning in tonight. God bless you. Stay in the Word. And you know I love you. Try to get some rest, right? No, I'm going to go and finish watching the rest of the playoff game and maybe relax for the rest of the evening. Not going to talk about theology. Going to watch the game. By the way, who's playing?